I'm back today, and I haven't gone close to catching up to. I'm about 3 weeks ago in email at the moment, and last 3 Mondays ago, whatever, nearly 2 weeks. But I haven't got to any of the traffic that's gone on, so I haven't set an agenda because I don't know what we talked about last week, and I have no idea what's going on. So I defer to Carl for.
Probably, what we could discuss is what are we going to start on now, full race at the end of last week, or who's going to be looking into these soldiers and making sure we can work with them. We made a big list of sub-projects and I have been trying to sort of separate things out and think of them as different jobs, but Chris has sort of argued that you can't do that because it's got to all be spread at once. But there were two sub-projects that we can at least start on and we don't disagree on, I think. And one is that we need to just try out some solvers and pick some that are going to be suitable for us. And the other is we can start with the matrix vector code and get used to writing MPI on that. How do people feel about that as a good place to...
Or to find the libraries that...
do it.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, I included that in the description.
This is really is picking a software packet that does the data distribution, right? Because that's going to... I mean, you could probably start yourself with a simple little self-written... project. I mean, that's how a lot of people start. You just define a data distribution yourself as a tensor product distribution, and then start there. And then, you know, you don't have to worry about the particular package you're using. It's kind of obscure the way I said that, but.
Probably my current understanding was that the most all-encompassing existing package is Bitsky, but it's been argued that it's oriented towards sort of structured meshes too much to suit us in general. Perhaps we need to confirm that. I was imagining using it as a solver, but not as a for our data distribution.
Yeah.
Does that sound reasonable?
I think so. Well, I think it's important to just find a package that has the solvers and that does have the solvers.
Yeah.
And it can be used as just a solver.
Yep.
Right. So.
And then to start the evaluation of those. Check your suitability for
yeah. One of the problems I was with comparing the different packages is we don't know what platform we're going to be running on. And we've talked about very large thousands of processors, but day to day we're probably using 1632 to 64. So how do you know for sure? Test runs on our shared machine.
What if we're going to raise, if we do a test run on our shared machine, does it
what if we
tell
do?
Us something?
Tell us how it runs on our shared machine.
But that was my argument before, is that we have to define these APIs, we have to think about these things that we could do in the future, but still target the platforms and the machines that we have and that we are using day to day. And hopefully if we've done the design right, unlike what we have at the moment, then someone should be able to come along and say, okay, let's take the solver part and make a solver that works well on thousands of nodes. But we can't write that. We don't have the machine. We're not sitting at it. It's not our first target. I don't think we can do that.
Sounds like you're suggesting us to just, for example, go for it with using Pepsi on the shared memory machine. And the long-term goal is to make sure the interface is
Isn't Pepsi based?
You know,
yeah.
So that if we decide that we need to do something else, that becomes then Chris would argue difficult with the message passing, since there's various different problems we're trying to solve, and I mean, just not thinking about all those issues, but just going forward with pets.
I'm sure there are lots of issues, and we have to solve them as we come across them, but we can't say I mean, the other option is to not do anything.
Yeah.
I'd like to see.
When you brought this up, now that we're on the subject, so you're sort of suggesting, like, can I record who's doing how much time on what things? I'm aware you started on, or what they're going to start on.
I'm not sure how much time. Well, I was going to start on the Bell thing, but the, I'm running sales and data that are changing mind and thinking the matrix sector would be a better place to start.
Okay, so what's wrong with the cell now? The big advantage to me is that it's targeting what we stated as our objective.
A matrix sector will be needed too.
That actually comes with examples, so we could build from those examples.
My imagination was that we would solve the matrix vector and the solver and everything on a single machine in shared memory at this point, in the first instance. So the distributed cell ML didn't require
that. I've seen the distributed cell as an opportunity for experimenting with different methods of communication and getting the data to the cells and spreading it out. Hypercube or whatever is necessary. Chris argued, well, most of the data is actually should be on the local nodes, so there's actually only the boundary information needs to be communicated. So say if you've got a whole element of cells on one node, and if the voltage updates so that the passing operation happens in a distributed manner, most of your values would be available and ready for the cells to go.
The argument is that there's a great, much larger amount of computational effort required to do the cell ML as opposed to solver. And so the granularity at which you distribute the solving part of it is very different to the granularity at which you distribute the electrical part of it. Therefore, even if you do a distributed solve and so on, that will be a granularity, even if you had 1,000 processes of 100 maybe, and 10 of those processes would have still have slave electrical components to them, so that they, because if you distributed the global solve over all 1,000, then the communication is the size of the granules is too small. I think that was kind of there's a relative amount of computation that I perceived, whether rightly or wrongly.
But if you do a reaction solve and you do an explicit order, it's a order n operation, or n is the number of cells that you're updating, number of grid points, whatever you want to call it. And if you have a cell model with 33 unknowns, then it's approximately order 33n. And then the diffusion solves, those are also order n for an optimal solver. So, they're all the same. Order of operations, but
again,
the reaction solve requires no communication going from time t equals tn to t equals tn plus 1. Where the diffusion solve going from t equals tn to t equals tn plus 1 requires a communication each time you do one iterative step of your iterative solver. The reaction solve can be completely parallelized while the and it will be perfectly scalable. While the diffusion solve won't be. So we'll take a hit.
So they're both ordering
operations.
But one of them still could be a lot larger.
A thousand. It'll be for some cells, and
That's right, and not for other ones.
In cell models.
Although I presume in an acquiescent state, a complicated cell model is probably still trivial to calculate. I don't know.
I don't know how they look.
Okay.
kinds of nice.
But it's simpler to start with the cell model.
Yeah, well, that was the argument, and therefore we could have the argument was that having a single solver and meshing node which distributed the electrical model across some small number of nodes below it was a generalizable thing, because then we could distribute that single node as a separate exercise, and it would still have peers that it used to do the electrical work, because the balance between the two levels of work wasn't equal. That was the argument that I put forward wrongly or rightly. And therefore, doing this distributed CellML step was a halfway step that was in the right direction. Have no way of presenting evidence.
Yeah.
Again. And although this is exactly what continuity does at this point. Mm. So we're working down a track.
Okay.
That's all it does. It doesn't do distributed other stuff. It just does distributed CellML, because that's the part that takes the computational time.
I can see some advantage in sort of recognizing that the relative amount of work involved in the reaction components is probably going to be quite large compared to the diffusion and the sort of solution of the linear equations. And, you know, can see the argument for concentrating initially on sort of parallelizing the reaction part of it. On the other hand, it may even be sensible to say, well, we recognize there is this vast difference, but let's just start off with that approach, but then bear in mind that we're going to have to separate the diffusion part as well, the solution, into separate.
Yeah, well, then totally. There's no doubt that we will. And I don't want to build a structure that is master-slave, which is what this I am implying by this, having a master and a slave.
Clear.
But I expect to generalize that master into a peer-to-peer set of masters, and then I don't feel like I've lost anything. If it turns out the optimal ratio is 1-to-1, i.e. that there is only, that every one does equal load, then that's okay, but I actually suspect that it won't be 1-to-1, it'll be something else. I don't know what that is.
I'm not sure if I'm completely understanding. You're saying you use fewer processes to do the fusion than to do the reaction?
That's what I would suggest.
Because the increased communication means you won't be able to parallelize across all your processes.
You can take some of them. Well, no, you can't. I mean, because the machines all have to wait, right?
Yeah. So you've got them there to use.
Yeah.
Unless there's some way of doing reaction and parallel with diffusion, but it seems difficult. Change the algorithm.
Even if it's 1-to-1 in the end, it still seems a useful model to be able to do something. It's heading towards our first objective, it's getting something done, and it's doing something we can't do today. It seems useful.
So doesn't that imply then that you need to decide on what that interface is going to be, irrespective of whether you're going to?
I'm still trying to argue that these things are experiments in which we just really don't understand what we're trying to do, and so we have to learn. I have no idea what that interface would look like. I don't think we can write it. I think we're in a position to write it until some people have written some code to see.
And so if you do have the notion of, you know, some work needs to be done, right? A quantum of work that needs to be done.
But it's called MPI, then you're writing MPI again.
Well, MPI is a bit more low level than that, I suppose.
Yeah, I always thought so.
What is the
experience with them.
Yeah, that we can solve bigger problems than we can now.
Mm.
Although the shared memory implementation will probably work.
Can we only have a shared memory machine at work?
Yeah.
So my intended goal was to understand more, and that was why I was thinking if I looked at Matrix Vector and somebody did, then that would be a good part to start learning to understand, because you see how other people have decided to do it.
It seems to me a better experiment would be, here's a software package that does the data distribution, and it sits on top of MPI, and we can do the kind of a pause with the interface, starting to get into the interface.
Sounds good.
Because it seems to me quite obvious that solving the cell models using MPI is going to be probably faster than serially, but it might not be faster than using OpenMP on the shared memory machine, for example.
Sure.
But it doesn't seem necessary to have an experiment showing that the MPI is going to lead to speed up, because that's kind of clear, I think.
I don't know the argument.
If you're doing this software package, then this is the kind of, this is how easy it is to use, this is the kind of interface we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Starting to explore the data distribution. I mean, we're exploring it on a platform that's quite simple in terms of solving the reaction part. It's a simple reaction solve. It's one ODE to solve, one set of ODEs to solve for each grid point, versus you needing to worry about passing it multiple times when you're doing the iterative solve. You solve each.
Well, I was doing the simple thing.
I was just talking about the outcome was that using this particular software package for the data distribution, that we can kind of make some statements about it. Not necessarily that it's going to show that we have speed up. I'm pretty sure we can get the speed up. So if we know we have three...
Okay, I guess we're trying to build in some experience. So I guess it's only just...
So then it's more of an experience than anything.
But we're working towards our goal. I think it feels like we're trying to achieve something rather than just talking about it.
Yeah. I just see two things. One is you can just say, let's just try and do this part in MPI. Let's do the reaction side of MPI. So we solve each. We have distribution of the grid points into subdomains, and we solve each. Each reaction equation on each subdomain for each grid point. Then after we've done that solve, we update and then collate so that we get back for the right-hand side for the diffusion solve. And we can just do that as an experiment, just to get experience in doing that. On the other hand, while we're doing that, we can instead say, well, these are three packages that we can use that takes a distributed vector and collates it into one vector.
Three
is a number throughout.
Okay, I just didn't
N.
But is N more than one? Or N is two, pixels we're writing it ourselves.
Well, N is two in a row anyway.
I would like to write something that we can write today rather than basing something on technology that might exist in the year.
So then
is that what you mean?
No, not really.
Sorry, what do you mean by N is two?
Because I would rather wait until you're finished and then... Sorry,
okay.
Okay.
I was finished.
Oh, okay.
I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, but basically that, though. You can either just do this experiment to try to get an experience, or before you're beginning the experiment, saying, let's start by looking at Pepsi,
yeah.
See how that works, and Carl might say, that was performed this certain way, and it might not be a valuable one to use, and then we can maybe look at, let's assume that there is another one besides Pepsi,
yeah.
And compare those two.
Yeah. This is the experiment Chris believes he's done. He compared Pepsi against nothing and said that it will not work, and so we have to write our own. That's exactly what that Chris did a year ago.
Well, I mean,
spent 3 or 4 months working on
this. I'm looking for sort of a higher level engineering type thing. I only found two things. One's called Zoltan, which provides dynamic redistribution of data and includes an unstructured communication package that greatly simplifies interprocess the communication. And the other one is Global Arrays, which is a toolkit for writing parallel programs that use large arrays distributed across processing nodes. I sort of think that he is more of a solve-alike and distribute it for us, but maybe that was a misinterpretation.
Okay.
He's quite keen for you to use everything in your environment, mm-hmm. right? That way you already set up.
More consistent, yeah. So,
so after this sort of initial experiment or sort of experience gathering, then do you envisage that we'd be in a position to try to start the specification of the interface? You know, basically, what is the simplest type of interface that we require to do the distribution?
And there's two things that we need to distribute, right? So there's a job,
yeah.
Right, and data.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, the data we were already almost discussing when we hadn't talked about parallelization with the data. But it's still tied up with the database we were talking about before. I think Chris's objections to sort of a lot of my discussion about data and field ML were that he wanted to keep that boundary separate, I think, which is reasonable, and that field ML should build on top of it, as far as I can tell, in the latest communications, rather than that field ML had to be separate completely, was that this field ML would use the distributed data library, whatever that was. There's the pictures that Peter drew me just before I left.
Is that data library tied up with a kernel? Is that computational?
No, I mean it was being used by the the pictures that Peter drew of his communications with Chris, whether they that's the way Chris would see it, I'm not sure.
So there are, I guess, two possibilities that we've got here just to gain some experiences, to have someone work on the cell, you know, the reaction stuff,
sure.
or to have someone work on the linear solver.
Sure.
I mean, who's going to do it? Number one, and do we want to have both going in parallel?
I think the knowledge we're left in parallel is we've got enough people to look into it.
And people being obviously yourself as one.
If I get MPR, I can put MPR in my laptop and I could probably find some. I mean, it wouldn't actually require a lot of effort to throw together a distributed.
Oh, he has done a little bit. He did it almost to that top and did start to have a place.
Yeah. I can't remember if I have it on this one or a different one, but I put it on the laptop, it's not hard. And I could just start.
What would you like to look at?
I would just create a distributed matrix and start wondering what exactly my aims are. Or is it to use Petsy, to use, because I have a package that I use on the cell, so I'm familiar with. I mean, I would be inclined to just try that out.
Is that the latest story?
No. Yeah. That's, I can't remember what it's... I can't remember what it's called on here.
Yeah. was actually in the references.
Okay, Diablo 95.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I have experience with that, so it's something that I could probably get going quicker. And that actually does a different distribution of the matrix than kind of the traditional way. Well, there's two approaches, really. One is to keep all of the matrix on, keep your entire stencil. So if you're a grid point on a boundary, then you have, there's a boundary here and your processor boundary, and your grid point here, and your neighbor grid point is here, and you've got,
and you share
5 points. Then you have the ghost boundary, right?
Yeah.
Then you have.
So it provides some tools for doing that for your address
extension. Well, what this one does is it duplicates this grid point here, for example. Then you don't put, define the boundary to be a cell.
Okay.
You define the boundary to be at the grid point.
Well, so then
both processors have this grid point. And then you make sure that that, for example, the right-hand side after you do the matrix vector multiply is updated. So that if you do a stencil calculation for this grid point, then one processor gets this contribution, the other processor gets this contribution. And at the end, you add it together to get the A times X for this grid point.
I was just wondering, I mean, you're just talking to me that perhaps Travis doing one and Carl's doing the other, but I was wondering, you might both want to look at something and get some depth and be able to debate it. One person come back and say, this is the way this part is.
Extreme. I think that would be a problem with arrays too. It might be, I mean, we'd both to look at the same one. So if you're looking at the global arrays.
Well, maybe. I mean, we could both be looking at different sort of packages and it helps us both with our understanding of MPIs, that thing we can say what are the advantages and disadvantages of packages. With the Diablo 95, you noted that it's only available under GPL. That's not our GPL, is it?
No.
So we can use it for experimentation, but we may not want to tie ourselves to that to anything on the GPL. So that may not. My guess is it's not a package that we actually have to look at.
Are you not arrays, not the other one?
Good question. Yes, it, same with the spider arenas, they're not, they really be for looking at and understanding and then do some engineering things.
So GPL means you can't,
everything that ever links to it
has to be GPL.
Yeah, I haven't found the license system instance.
So if you're selling software products and you can use something on GPL in your software, you just have to note any changes you've made.
And you have to distribute changes, but you have to make available the source for the LTPO as well, but you're allowed to do it.
You just need to make sure that people can use an updated version of the LGPL package without the shared viability is sufficient.
Yeah. I wouldn't be inclined to test out a product that wasn't available for us to use in the long term personally.
Yeah. I think it's probably better to spend down with it as well. PetsQ is sort of under a BSD license, so portions under LGPL that you can include or not, depending on the installation of RAIDs. But I'm happy with LGPL. The only thing that limits us is we can't make a static binary out of it and distribute it.
Or distribute lots of objects where we've tried cause them to lots of problems. You can only link it on this machine.
Yeah. We have to distribute those shared objects.
Do you mind finding one that we can
Oh, I'm quite keen to look into global areas and both things, see if they're going to be helpful for us.
Does it have a nice website with nice documentation?
Well, it's a long time for me to look. So,
okay. Yeah, I hope that there's at least a few simple examples to start out with.
Who's
that? Where's that from, global areas? Is it a university or is it a research lab or is it?
It's from X. It's based at Norsk. The sort of X tools, what's the thing? ACTS. Quoted quite a few.
Norsk?
Yeah. But I think Norsk's just a part of X. And the X collection contains. I think they use this. Excellent.
Have you seen other people citing this as being used in the code?
I've seen that come up on quite a few websites, but not so much global ones. And sometimes this seems to be a little bit of a known.
There's Sandia as a project too. I know there's someone died. Mexico State that's written done some large biomain simulations using the package of Sandia National Labs.
Okay.
Trillionos is a part of that. I think it's much bigger than just Trillionos.
Okay.
Can't remember what else you feel like you feel. But it also might be, some packages want you to do everything in their package. I think that's there's this kind of more encompassing package. It'd be harder to pull out the data distribution. Do you have MPI in your?
Well, I think that's installed. There's something with it.
So I'm going to decide to just both look at global arrays.
PIPS is probably the other thing we could look at. I'm probably quite keen to look at both of them. I'm not just going to be around for a week.
Well, in terms of matrix vector, there are examples that I can just look at, so I don't see the benefit personally in doing that.
I think
we have Fortran examples and they have C examples.
So. That would be helpful for more than one of us. I don't know.
Okay.
Cool. Okay. It's interesting too to determine just how different their sort of, or whether there are sort of common elements on their API. So maybe that would be an indication of help us to build up a generic one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is a good idea. We could look at a few of them in terms of just their API, basically, especially the GPL versions that we're not going to use long term.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah.
Some solve.
Well, some of the symbols are so simple, the differences, but people.
But you want to be able to make sure, you want to be able to have some way of adding values from multiple processes to this array rather than having a single array. You could imagine a distributed solver that took a matrix and then distributed it, but that's not very helpful.
No. That's partly where I thought this was kind of a nice starting point, having to deal with it.
Do you have any comments for
So, over the period that you were away sharing, we've had some discussions with module levels.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
That was quite useful. They were concerned that the approach that we had of creating meshes didn't sort of contain high level information about boundaries, and so that's really quite useful to provide that link between the actual mesh and the sort of more abstract ideas of what are the boundary conditions and where should they be applied.
Is that not just you make subregions that you call them boundaries? Or
I think that sort of got me thinking about, well, if that's important, then that should be sort of part of the definition of the mesh, so that you can we should put some effort into making sure that the mesh allows us to automatically calculate what the boundaries are to a mesh.
Okay.
And also to enable us to automate the operations of joining meshes together, for instance, and thereby eliminating parts of the boundary that are shared. So, the trouble with that approach is that you need to sort of include the boundary information right at the lowest level. But I think that got a scheme to do that.
And then do you have to start doing Boolean operations all the way through?
It depends on what you mean by all the way through. If you are constructing a mesh, I think part of that the methods that you use for joining are going to have to do a fair bit of calculation. But what you end up with is a representation of a mesh that is pretty accessible.
Sure.
So there are some sort of issues involved. If you take the approach of on a simple example here, just to illustrate some of the issues. Okay. Say we've got a simple mesh 2D, right? And that may well be derived from some template, right? We may not explicitly have to store all of this information associated with that, but only add incrementally information from a template. Right. So let's say we're in the process of constructing a mesh, and we've got these two sub meshes here, and we want to associate them.
Let's say we have information about the mesh itself and its boundaries. In essence, what we're going to try and do here is associate portions of the boundary of this mesh with portions of the boundary of that mesh. And you know, clearly what we're really after is saying, well, from a very low level point of view, if this is an element that has these, this is a 2D element that has these 1D elements as you know, making up its boundary, then what we want to do is say, well, we're going to join this 1D element with that 1D element there, and in the resulting mesh, eliminate these two as separate boundary entities, so that the boundary of this now becomes this collection of 1D elements around the side. But there are some issues that get raised here. You know, one of the nice things about having this knitting being done by associating, you know, points is that it makes it explicit what the orientation is, and we don't really need to worry about the underlying structure. But this approach here doesn't give you enough information to say, well, this is
enough redundant.
Yeah. So that's why I sort of started to think, well, maybe it is a good idea to incorporate those that boundary information right from the lowest level and see how we can incorporate that information in a sort of constructive approach to build a consistent new boundary for a new set of elements, right? Okay. So even in this case here, you know, which is very, very simple, all we want to do is associate these two 1D elements together. There are issues that get raised. One is that what happens if we have coordinates in the opposite directions, right?
Mm-hmm. Global coordinates, yeah, local coordinates.
Yeah, local coordinates, yeah. That's right. You know, we need to be able to accommodate that. Therefore, we need more information in this transformation process. So what I'm proposing is that we have a, whenever we come to join meshes together, this is similar to the approach that I had in the initial stages. We create a new object that is associated with the joined ensemble, or you know, the new ensemble, right? And we provide transformations that you know, provide the common link between those two.
Is it linking the two sort of one-dimensional things or the two two-dimensional?
Just the two one-dimensional things. You know, they may. I know when we sort of incorporate derivatives that we may wish to have additional information, but I'm just dealing with the meshing at the moment.
So I guess if I say, why isn't there only one dimensional item there and both two dimensional elements? If you say use that one dimensional item, why do we need one for each mesh? And a
if you want to, if the two things are templated, then you don't want them to have, you want them to have always having the same size. But that's the trouble that we have with the same thing, it seems like. We don't template two elements, we always template single elements. So they're all templated. And so you have a different transformation if you put them together like that or like that.
That's
the same size.
That's because you've tied your one-dimensional item to the element rather than tying your global one-dimensional item to your element. But I suppose what you're saying, it's easier to tie a one-dimensional item to a one-dimensional item than to tie a global one-dimensional item to your element.
Then you have to create all the global one-dimensional items. You have to have them all. Yeah. And then you can't template them. you only have to duplicate or replicate the ones that are the actual stitching point. Right.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
You could have a single matrix there, that would be the other option, but it
yeah, I think that induces the asymmetry. Which may be an approach that you want to take. You know, essentially, you may wish to always say, "Well, this is the master ensemble, and we're trying to stitch
this one up on top of
it." That might be okay, but this is just a sort of a pass.
Yeah.
So. What I was thinking was, well, if we require that information about orientation in the 1D case, right?
Yeah.
Or even in the 1D case, what if we wanted to do something like
this alignment? Yeah.
Like this, right?
Yeah, hanging that.
Yeah, exactly. How do we accommodate that? And I think the simplest way to do that is to make use of to restrict these transformations to be affine transformations, right? They are really nice in the sense that they define a sort of a closed set. So we can make use of the fact that you can concatenate affine transformations and still end up with affine transformations and have a very simple then matrix vector product in order to identify points on one boundary with the
It's just a rotation and translation.
Yeah, basically. So there's A of P plus P, right? So there is a translation component.
Okay. Do we need a translation here or?
Not in this case here.
Well, the hanging about it, because it's minus plus one.
So zero doesn't go to zero, right?
Okay.
So
it goes to one.
I think that is the minimum that you require. It certainly needs a translation component.
And this is exactly what Senghui implements, except that it shares those affine transformations, and so you can't actually deal with the offsetting. If you template the element, it maintains the mapping all the time, which is an affine transformation, which David worked out a very clever way of storing in a very small amount of values. But by writing it out as a matrix and then storing them by the hex as well, the decimal values of the same hex representation. But
using field bits,
using the bits to represent lots of ones and zeros. But anyway. It doesn't have the joining one, it only has the 2D to the 1D, but it has all those amplitude transformations stored.
Yes. And I think there are tricks that we can use this. In 90% of cases it will be a direct match, the identity
or the inverse.
Or the inverse, and you may wish to have a special case of that for
sure.
But nevertheless, the sort of conceptual
outline.
And I think one of the nice things about something like this is that if you include sort of methods for essentially aggregating objects, you could well aggregate 2 1D elements into a single 1D element, which has, again, this affine transformation from this to that. Okay. So now, when you come to join two ensembles like this, then it may well be done via a matching of a single element.
Yeah.
So now, okay.
Yeah.
In this case here, we've got this boundary of this ensemble here made up of 6 separate 1D elements, just a collection, right? But if you are able to aggregate and use an affine transformation in that aggregation,
you can then create a new ensemble which has four 1D boundary elements that could make the stitching of large ensembles a trivial process. So in order for that to work, I think what we need is
I'm presuming I have an IT meeting as well.
What's that?
I just say I presume I have an IT meeting as well.
Yeah, no, this is I think this was put up in the last meeting. A set of ensembles of dimension n, right? So an ensemble is made because we need to put some restrictions on what can make up a mesh or an ensemble in order for us to have some consistent notion of what is a boundary. We need to restrict the dimension of the child ensembles to be of the same dimension as the parent ensemble.
I mean, sure.
Okay.
I'll leave that go. I see why, but I just...
To be consistent with differential topology, and make use of all of the mathematics behind that. But also, it makes the bookkeeping a hell of a lot easier if we do have that restriction.
I think that you can include boundaries, but it depends whether you have other categories of smaller... Thank you, guys.
Okay, so this boundary then becomes an ensemble of dimension n minus 1. There are some additional structures that is required here in order to provide those the knitting, which I just haven't sort of worked through.
But is there some way of putting a smaller dimensional element into an ensemble and calling it something else?
There could well be. For instance, we discussed this
already as well.
If you have simple cases, a reservoir where you've got stuff feeding into it, right? I think in this case here, what we do is have an ensemble which is, maybe 3D,
right?
And we have separate associated ensembles which may be 1D, right? And then the actual problem is defined as a linkage between these separate ensembles and the 1D ensemble and the 3D ensemble.
Sure. I guess I was more getting at being able to just identify arbitrary surfaces or lines or so on within an ensemble you have.
I think that's
and giving them names.
Yeah. No, I think that's embedding. Like for instance, the case of the coronary tree. In the myocardium, is that what you're getting at?
Boundary seems like that is one special case, but I wonder if there aren't others. Although I'm struggling to.
Yeah. Okay. No. I agree. And I started to think about what sort of operations you would want for.
Keep going. It is 12.
So we open the door and then we know when...
Well, no, they're probably starting to lock. They come and go away. Yeah, here's Martin.
Oh. Maybe they're doing it.